Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. It is Monday, August 22nd, and this episode is brought to you by my fantastic sponsor, El Cajon Harley. I want everybody to buy their motorcycle at El Cajon Harley. There's no excuse. Get your bike at the coolest dealer going. Southern California superstars in the motorcycle world. I love El Cajon Harley. They got all kinds of great people working there. A fantastic shop. Excellent motor clothes selection. I got a new helmet there recently. Fantastic service department. They know their shit. Sometimes you'll go to a dealer and you'll be like, yeah, you know this or that. And they're like, I don't know. These guys know, man. They can help you customize your Harley, get some badass handlebars. I'm thinking about going ape hangers. I'm thinking of going ape hangers now on my Road King. I'm a lunatic. This would be my third handlebar change on my Road King. Fucking dumb am I. But yeah, I'm thinking ape hangers for the winter. Anyway, they can help you customize your bike. They also have all kinds of used motorcycles there. And they can get you finance too. You're probably thinking, hey, I got bad credit or whatever. You know, I always thought that. And then I went in, boom, got finance. So get your ass in there. They got brand new Harleys. Speaking of new Harleys, tomorrow morning, I believe, they're going to show the brand new 2017s online. But they're going to show you the new 2017 Harley-Davidsons. This is the time of the year where they have what they call the dealer show. Harley does. And all the dealers go to like a location. I used to work for Harley. And one time it was at Vegas. One time it was in Nashville at the Grand Ole Opry. But you go somewhere, and then they secretly have all the brand new models that nobody knows about until they fucking ride them into the show. And this year, in particular, it's supposed to be pretty significant from what I'm hearing on the rumors. It's going to be a new motor, which is crazy. A new motor, the end of the era for the twin cam, which has been an absolute bulletproof motor for Harley Davidson. The twin cam is just a fantastic engine. You got to think back. They had like the flathead. Then they had my favorite, the knucklehead. Then they had the panhead. Then the shovel head. Then they had the Evo, which some people called the blockhead, the Evo motor. That's when Harley bought the dealership back from the Japanese AMF bowling ball company. They had the Evo, which I really like that motor. That's in the FXRs. And I like the way the power comes on the Evo. And then they came out with the twin cam and now this new motor, which I don't know what it's called, but the rumor is it's the Milwaukee 8 motor. We'll see. It's supposed to be 107 engines from what the rumors are saying in the normal bikes. And then the CVO's 117. And the 117 is finally supposed to be over 100 horsepower. Woo! Harley's not about speed, man. It's just about fucking quality. And, you know, I've had all the other motorcycles. And, yeah, there's some great ones. But my Harley, my Road King's got 20,000 miles on it already. It's a little over a year old or so. And just not one thing wrong. It's so funny. I heard, sometimes I like to overhear people's conversations. I was standing at the magazine stand. There's this fantastic magazine stand in my neighborhood, which is so old school. A magazine stand. They're open all night. It's just outdoors on the street. And I love fucking magazines, man. It's crazy. I still love them. But I love overhearing people's conversations when they're talking about shit. They have no clue what they're talking about. So there's just this old fucking white dude. And he's obviously just lonely and just wants to blow steam. He just wants to talk to somebody. So he's hanging out at the magazine stand. And here comes a Harley coming by. You know, and he's all fucking, look at that guy. Yeah, fucking Harley just making noise. Those things are the biggest pieces of shit, man. You know, my buddy is a LA policeman, a motor cop, and he told me that they quit using Harleys because they just fall apart. After 5,000 miles, he said they would have to take it in and do $20,000 in service after only 5,000 miles. Yeah, you know, so they said, fuck this. It costs too much money. We're going to Honda and BMW. Which, I you know, when somebody's like that, I just want to turn around and go, you're so wrong. You just, why would you just walk around and just be wrong? You just open your mouth and just wrong just spills out of your pie hole. What? I mean, he's just telling a stranger this, and the stranger's like, really? Huh, yeah, I didn't know. Huh, that's crazy. That's not even close to true. First of all, if you were putting 20 grand into a Harley repairs, you would just buy a new one. They're like 18,000, the ones that the cops ride, and they get a discount, so they're like probably 14,000. So that's wrong. And second of all, that's not why they stopped riding Harley. They rotate every year. The city looks for the best bids. Like, okay, who's got the lowest bid this year? And one year, Beamer came in lower than Harley. Then another year, Honda comes in. There's no loyalty to the brand. It's just about the bottom line, the dollar. How much is it going to cost us to buy 500 motorcycles? That's all. They don't give a fuck about what bikes they're riding. You can ask the cop. They're like, oh, God, I wish I was riding the Harleys, you know? They're way more comfortable. Some people go, I wish we were riding the Beamers or whatever. The point is, the guy's just walking around shouting out nonsense. So fucking, yeah. Anyway, that was a little rant on that fucking guy. I just heard him. But yeah, I can't wait. It's like Christmas for me. Every year, I'm like, oh, God, the dealer show. What are they going to come out with? They have, like, you know, recently had that new bike, the Dyna S, come out. And that just fucking came out of nowhere. Total top secret. Harley keeps a pretty good fucking secret. Like Rolex. You never know, man. There's a lot of guesses and a lot of wrong guesses and a lot of right stuff. So tomorrow, hit the website. Check it out. And I'm just talking about fucking Harleys. I love them, obviously. I'm a fucking lunatic. Anyway, how are you guys? Let's get into the episode right here. Great. It's a double episode today. I've never done this. I want to try it out. It's two different short interviews, both about 40 minutes. And I decided to put them together because they're a little rock and roll and a little comedy. And that's really what my whole life is, comedy and rock and roll. I don't really care about anything else. It's all I think about. Matter of fact, though, I've been going to so many concerts lately. I'm backing back out. I gotta get my nose back to the grind, and just fucking concentrate 100% comedy. I mean, that's what I always do. But I've been going to quite a few concerts lately, and okay, I'm good. I'm good on fucking concerts. I've seen a million. The only one I'm going to go to after this will be Temple the Dog. And that's so monumental to me that that's a must, you know? I mean, Temple the Dog, I still think back to this day when Andrew Wood died. And I was just floored. Mother Love Bone, definitely one of the top records ever to come out of Seattle. I absolutely loved him as a frontman, a songwriter, a singer. And what an epic band. Of course, later becoming Pearl Jam, if you don't know that. The roots of Pearl Jam. Please go backwards and get Mother Love Bone. You will not fucking be disappointed. Look at all the great stuff that came out of Seattle, man. It's just insane. I talk about it over and over. And I truly believe it's some of the greatest music ever made. Nirvana, Mad Season, Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Temple of the Dog. What else we got? What, Melvins, Mark Lanegan, all that stuff that he's worked on, everything. Heart, You know, what else? Fucking Jimi Hendrix. I mean, Seattle, man. Wow. Underrated. Underrated as a music mecca, man. I mean, you got San Fran for the hippie stuff and Metallica and the metal. You got Seattle for all the great grunge. And then you got New York for their thing, you know. And it's underrated there, Seattle. Anyway, I'm just all over the board today because I'm just fucking... I'm feeling good today. I'm feeling good. I had a great weekend of comedy, working on some new stuff. Whenever I work on new stuff and it starts to work, I feel fucking energized. Thanks for all the love on my heel. The heel comes and goes. Everybody out there seemed to be a doctor. They were all like, here's what's wrong with you. I love it. Not one real doctor listening to this podcast, I guess, because no real doctor hit me and went, you know what's going on with your foot. But I know it's not gout, so I've crossed that off. It's just old, just getting old like we were talking about. Speaking of old but mighty, Metallica, what are they? They're 33 years old as a band. How fucking cool is that? A couple days ago, they just dropped a new song out of nowhere. I love this fucking concept. Total mystique. Just boom. No fucking, no talking, nothing. Just, I'm in a car with somebody. I was with Greg Riley from El Cajon Harley. He was in town. We went to Guns N' Roses. He took me. Anyway, we're in a car. Steve Jones from Jonesy's Jukebox, Sex Pistols, KLOS has an incredible show. Everybody listens to it that's into music every day. I think it's 12 to 2. And we just turn the radio on. We catch a tail and he's all, yeah, that was new in Metallica. Dun, 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 new Metallica, mate. And I was like, new Metallica? I immediately hit my fucking Twitter feed. It's lighting up. Boom, I hit the YouTube link, watch the video, and my fucking jaw just drops, man. I just could not believe how incredible the new song is, Hardwired. Just straight up kill them all. The solo, if you just played me the solo, I would be like, yeah, that's off Kill 'Em All. The tone, everything. Kirk Hammett, what an absolute fucking god on guitar. I say it over and over, man. You see that guy live, he is flawless. He never makes mistakes. He looks great. He has an amazing collection. His tone's killer. And hats off to him and the band and Lars. Tired of Lars getting fucking slack for 30 years. Fuck off, everyone. The guy, yeah, he stood up to illegal downloading and stuff. And then you just try to write him off. And at the end, he was totally right. And no one said he was right. Like right now, people should be going, you know, Lars was right. You know, people just steal music. No one ever does that, you know? Of course, whatever you think, he's a millionaire or he's a... Whatever your thoughts are, that's just weird to me. And tell me why, you know? Tell me why you don't like the guy. Is it because he's crazy famous and successful and writes amazing tunes? That's pretty crazy if you don't like him for that. Or maybe you don't like him because you think he sucks or something. That's lunacy, too. He plays amazing. Double bass is great. He has original outside the box ideas, you know? Yeah, is he Bozio? No, but who needs we don't need a million Bozios and we don't need a million John Bombs. We need different dudes and different styles. That's what makes rock interesting. Anyway, I love you, Metallica, and I can't wait to hear the rest of the record. I am pretty fucking fired up. Of course, everybody listening to the show has absolutely listened to the new Metallica by now. If not, wow. I want to get into the double episode. Part one is an incredible guest, Mike Lawrence. Mike Lawrence is a New York City comedian who recently won the roast battle that was featured on Comedy Central. Jeff Ross's roast battle, which I was... I'm so proud of those guys, man. Brian Moses started this show at the Comedy Store. It's so organic, just a started from a couple guys arguing in the parking lot. They moved it up to the belly room, did a roast battle, and 2 years later or so, it's a fucking TV show, man. You know, that is a dream come true. That is absolutely from hard work and organic fun, you know, at the store. That's why the Comedy Store rules more than anything on the planet. It's still wide open for any ideas. There's no rules. There's no, that's not going to work, or this is what we got to do. There's no fucking worried about the dollar. It's just like, yeah, do your show and have fun. And look what happened, man. The store exploded, the comedy roast battles exploded, and now all the people that are involved are exploding, and I say badass and hats off. And if you haven't seen the roast battle, watch it on ComedyCentral.com. It is a must. Mike Lawrence won the roast battle. He is an amazing writer. He also wrote for Amy Schumer's sketch show. And it was great to talk to him in New York City, and I just listened to it a little bit just now. And it took me back, even though I've been home 2 weeks, back to New York. And what a great fucking 2 weeks I had there. And I miss it. Second guest, incredible new band Mark Maron turned me on to about, I'd say 2 months ago at the store in the hallway. He came in, "You got to hear Quaker City Nighthawks." And I was like, "Oh, all right, let's do it." And I fired it up and I loved him immediately. My guest is singer-songwriter from Quaker City Nighthawks, Mr. Sam Anderson. And this band is fucking smoking, and I think everyone should know about them. They're old school, out touring around the country with the Sheepdogs, another band I love and have talked about and interviewed on here. And I went and saw them together a few weeks ago. I talked about it, and it was fantastic. And I want everybody to check out Quaker City Nighthawks right after this episode. Thank you guys for everything. A lot of reviews and subscribers the last couple weeks. Keep it up. Keep leaving the reviews and subscribing. That's how we get in the top 50. And this is your show. I do it for you guys. I love you guys. All Del Razors, candles lit. One last thing, this Thursday night, I'll be running an hour at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room. Come on down, Dean Del Rey's Distortion Show. I got a special guest coming. I'm not going to tell you who it is yet. And then it's going to be Red Band. He's there with me. And a few other awesome comedians. That's this Thursday at the store. And also, check me out, Arizona, August 31st through September 4th. I'll be at the House of Comedy. Do not sleep. Please, Arizona, tell friends. Let's fucking fill it up. One last thing. I got a few of those Marshall shirts, Delray Marshall shirts available. Email me. I've got like six more XLs and a few more larges, one medium. Thank you, everybody. Keep the candles lit. Here you go. Let There Be Talk. Mike Lawrence. All right, here we are. Another episode of Let There Be Talk, live on the fucking street in front of the stand with my guest, Mike Lawrence. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, buddy.
The fucking roast battle champion.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man. Did you do the roast battle last year?
No, I did not.
You didn't? Yeah,
last That's year. Why someone else won.
Oh!
Shots fired. Nah, he's great, man. He. Yeah. Dude, he took me out to dinner the night that I was in the finals, and it was really sweet to me. We've been talking since, so yeah. All the love for that guy. I'd love to battle him someday.
Yeah, I'd love to see that, right?
Yeah, man, he's great.
What a great fucking show that turned out to be, you know?
Phenomenal. The set was amazing.
Set was amazing, and also...
It kept the feel.
The vibe was amazing, and everybody just looked like they were having the best time, because that thing has been, you know, I'm a Comedy Store guy, and
yeah.
That thing's been growing in there for years, and bam, man, so organic. Talk about from two guys arguing in the parking lot to taking up in the belly room to a fucking TV show.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, right?
And it's kept what makes it good, which I think is important, you know, just... As one of the comedians, I could say there was no censorship. They let us be ourselves, and, you know, we're like, whatever jokes you do, you know, just hope they don't suck.
Yeah, that's amazing. And also...
The freedom of it was incredible. I've never had that freedom doing TV before.
That's amazing, right? Because they could have easily said, look, we'll do the show, but let's get rid of this wave thing, and let's do this and that and, you know, whatever. But they didn't. They took the whole formula. It was awesome. Yeah. I love it. Now, I often think about roasting, and I think about it, and I talked to you about it on Bobby Kelly's podcast. When I was young, I was way into, they used to call it capping. You know, you just cap on each other, like a junior high at the lockers.
Yeah.
And it was a radical thing and sometimes led to fights. What was your early experience of doing some roasting, like high school, junior high?
It was definitely elementary school. I had a bully older brother who was such a jerk. I remember we went to summer camp together and he was like, this is my brother Mike. He has no friends. You know, does anyone want to be his friend? Like, he was the ultimate dick. He's the one person that would love to roast Pat now.
Is he still a dick?
Kind of, but he's cool, man. He was really proud of me about this. But just my family, you know, my mom was a comedian. My dad's a ball buster. Like, we just come from, like, a long line of assholes. you know, my dad at an early age, like, you know, he was like 300 pounds. And he would, like, let us make fun of him for being fat. So it was a very, like, friendly environment to be mean.
Wow, a friendly environment to be mean.
Exactly.
I mean, you got to think about also some of the early days of even that the rap poetry stuff, you know.
I did slam poetry.
Slam poetry, man. Yeah. I like watching that stuff. A couple of years ago, I'd get down that rabbit hole on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
And just start watching these dudes. And those guys were fucking brutal, right?
Dude, I love the... I would watch a lot. I'm not a big rap guy, but I love battle rapping.
Yeah.
Battle rapping is amazing to me. And then I watched every episode of Yo Mama, MTV's Yo Mama, and I knew that they weren't doing their own jokes, you know, 98% of the time, but it still was something that stuck out to me as, like, you know, when basically roast battle is Yo Mama, but you write the shit yourself.
Right, right, right.
It's the same show, but, you know, done much better and with more authenticity.
I think, I don't know how you are, but I'm 50 and I grew up with, like, Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
And a lot of those shows, like, of course, Sanford and Son.
Oh, yeah.
Those were roasting. The scripts were just roasting back and forth with, like, Aunt Esther, you big dummy, and all that stuff, you know?
It literally made you think, like, what the writers thought of Rob Reiner that day.
He
got
right?
the worst out of all the family.
He did get the worst.
And I love Married with Children, too. Amanda Bierce, or whatever her name is, who played Marcy. Oh, God, the chicken tit jokes and all that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, awesome. The dryness of that, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, you grew up where, Florida?
Yeah, South Florida.
South Florida, mm-hmm. And when do you start comedy?
23 years old, after I'd been doing slam poetry for years and realized there was no money or even joy in that anymore.
You were doing slam poetry?
Yeah, I was.
In Florida? Like, what kind of venues?
You know, I started off at, like, the library as a teenager, and then they kicked me out. They said I was too old.
Too old for the library?
Yeah, because it was, like, a teen thing. And then they had me go to, you know, I went to coffee shops. I went to Barnes & Noble where there was, like, seniors reading poetry. It was, the whole thing was embarrassing, and I did it for longer than I should have.
Wow.
But the coffee shop that I started comedy at was the place I had done, like, spoken word at for years and would read essays and stuff. I mean, I would hate who I was now. Like, I would go up with, like, a sheet of paper and just read off of it after some guy would do Piano Man, you know?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I was the fart in the church.
I still am way into Rollins' spoken word. I think that's some of the most incredible shit I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah, I had that book Ice Cream that he did, yeah.
I saw him live back in the, early 90s at UC Berkeley. And he did 3 fucking hours, and it felt like an hour, you know? Yeah. And it's so incredible to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, just a compelling... I know he did Ari's show last year, and I was at that... I did a story on that taping, and he was incredible.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
He and also his memory is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Which I was... it was impressive to watch the roast battle because... you know, of course, we're comedians and we remember an hour set or whatever, but you're under the gun and your mind is a little fucking scattered and you got to remember these jokes and deliver them killer.
That you've never done on stage before.
Right.
That's the big thing.
Yeah, that is the big thing because it's like... We do open mics and we bury new material in hour-long sets, but this is on TV.
Yeah.
The pressure's on, and you got to do it.
For sure. Yeah, it was scary, you know? And, I mean, I was that asshole. You know, it was at Montreal. There's all this industry. My wife was there. I just knew that I had to be selfish to win. You know, like, I asked every friend that I could to run my jokes. You know, I would talk to my wife, like, you know, my wife would be like, I love you so much. I'm like, Matt Broussard, what a piece of shit, right? It's like, enough about him. You know, but it was this thing of like, you know, I didn't think I was going to win. I mean, and nobody should, and I'm a piece of shit if I did. But, I mean, my goal was get to the finals. Just get to the finals. I'm probably going to get knocked out, like, I don't see myself as a likable person. Someone more likable will beat me. And then, like, you know, I mean, it feels amazing to win. I'm happy, you know, and my career's in a better place now than it was a week ago.
What happened right after that? Did you get a lot of calls? You said a lot of industry people that would never talk to you were all up your ass.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, I mean, you know, that's the business. Like,
yeah, totally.
It's what can you do for them and... You know, I mean, the thing is, like, this is the skill that I've had. I've cultivated it. And, you know, they just happened to finally see it because they were all there at the festival. That, I mean, that show became the big event at the festival. Everybody was there.
Right. Yeah, man. Yeah. I heard that that was basically what everybody was doing.
Yeah.
If they weren't out drinking.
Yeah, or doing a midnight show.
That would have been a terrible year to go as Fresh Faces, right? People would just be like, oh, I'm not going to that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't drink at all, and I think that gave me an advantage, too.
Yeah. You're just in your room fucking working, and you got a fresh brain.
Yeah, and it was really sweet at the end of it. Like, Jeff Ross came up to me and talked to me about that, but he was like, I know, like, you obsessed about this stuff, and, you know, and that means a lot to the show. And, I mean, I've been to the one in L.A. a lot. I've battled a couple times there. I judge whenever I'm in town, and then... I help co-book, and I'm the permanent judge at the one at the Stand, Roastmasters, every other Tuesday. So it's definitely it's a huge part of my life. And, you know, it's that kind of thing, like, you don't know what things in comedy, like, you know, you're 50. You didn't know what a podcast was until, you know, more than half your life.
You're right.
It's like, and it's a thing that, you know, you use now that you love. And, I mean, so you never know what the thing is going to be.
It's so true. I started comedy 6 years ago, and my whole fucking life changed, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I thank God that I probably waited till I was 44.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I wouldn't have taken it serious like I do now, you know? And it's the love of my life.
You'd probably had enough failure already, too, to, like, motivate you and, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's a good thing, yeah.
I knew not to fucking take it on unless I was going to really do it because it's so fucking hard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's demanding. And, you know, like, I mean, that is, like, the ultimate thing with roast battle, you know. When I book people to battle, I'm just like, look, you're more than happy to do this, and I know you want to do it because it's popular right now, but just know this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
This is not an easy show to do, and... You will bomb very easily, and we will talk about you bombing as you're bombing. It's a very specific type of bomb.
Yeah. I judged one of the roast battles, and I thought I was going to go in like, oh, somebody will suck, and it'll be easy.
Yeah.
And both guys did not suck.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, fuck, now I just got to judge it like a regular sporting event, you know?
Yeah, it's way harder when they're both great because, well, also, like, you become, like, in awe of the craftsmanship, and so you don't want to, like...
Yeah, you don't want to shoot a guy down. Like, between you and Kay Trevor, I was like, these are both fucking great.
Yeah, that guy's phenomenal.
That was a good...
And I'm, you know, I'm happy what it's doing for me. I definitely hope it's doing things for that guy because he totally deserves it. He's a genius, that guy.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, you know, everybody on the show is going to do good because they, most of them were relatively unknown, you know?
Yeah, Tiana, who was second place, she was fantastic. You know, Earl came out of nowhere.
Yep. Let's talk about early on in your comedy. How long have you been doing comedy?
It'll be 11 years in November.
And who were you into? Who got you into comedy?
I mean, my mom made it seem real to me. You know,
your mom did comedy. What's her name?
Yeah, she was Alice Lawrence back then. You know, and I would watch her. You know, my parents divorced, changed her name since, but like now it's Alice Colon. But I remember I would watch her, and you know, it at least became tangible. It wasn't like I saw her and was like, I got to do comedy now. But when I did get into comedy, you know, I talked to her first. Like, I saw it as a business from the beginning. You know, and I mean, yeah, I think so many people that start now start as fans.
Yeah.
And that's why there's so many shows that don't pay people and take advantage of people. And, you know, because we're so naive. And I think starting off a little cynical and jaded helped.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I played music all my life, so I knew the business behind the door. Like, hey, man, don't shake and fake me, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We were talking about it last night, you know?
Yeah.
So, but who were you into early on? What years were we talking about?
My big comedy influences, for sure, are, you know, like, I remember watching with my dad. Like, Fox had the best Sunday night lineup when I was a kid for, like, 1 year, I think. But it was, like, the first season of In Living Color.
Yes.
You know, yeah. Maybe, like,
Jim Carrey.
4 or 5 seasons into Married with Children.
Yes.
And then the beginning of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
You know, it, I mean, The Simpsons, I'd say, is where, you know, my biggest influence by far. My biggest stand-up influence is definitely Patton Oswalt. You know, I watched those George Carlin specials with my dad, but definitely Patton's my guy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's my favorite.
He's amazing, right?
Yeah, genius.
And right now, these guys are just unbelievable. Like, if you look at, like, Burr, Maron, Patton, yeah. Andy Kindler, Todd Barry, all these fucking guys are just, they're like genius, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And we're just in such a great era of comedy, of being able to watch guys write new hours and inspire us to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's, the great thing about comedy now is, like, I mean, the downside is, you know, no one will make as much money as the biggest guy before, but it's way more divided.
Yeah.
And so many more people are making money.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know if there's as many, like, professional comics as there were in the boom, but I think just the ways as a comedian to make money, you know, whether it's as viewer lucrative podcast host or, you know, all these networks that need content now and are going to comics to create that content is pretty incredible.
That is incredible. I mean, you got everything. You got Hulu, True TV, YouTube, Funny or Die. You got Kevin Hart coming out with the network. They all need content.
Yeah.
So you're and also you can make your own content with podcasts and fucking channels and everything of your own on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's a whole different world, man.
It's the biggest competition. It's like, you know, I worked on, like, a topical TV show recently, and, you know, our show would air a few weeks after we would tape, and then it's like, you look at, like, YouTube, and it's like, and Twitter, like, that's, you know,
it's already done.
Yeah, and that's the scariest thing about comedy now, is that the average person can do it as well as you for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, you think so?
I think a lot of times, yeah.
You mean a lot of people could have a hot five?
I think they do. You know, yeah. They have their moment or whatever. You know, it doesn't sustain, but, like, you know, more people saw Chewbacca Mom than any movie that came out this year.
Yeah, you're right there. You're right there.
Yeah.
What, do you think the hour's dead, the comedy special hour? You think that's
dead?
No,
and I think, like, places like Netflix have helped revitalize it. I don't think anything ever truly dies. You know, it's like energy. It just transfers. It gets, you know, place somewhere else. It becomes something different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, how do you write your stand up compared to your roasting? Because it's a tough like thing. Some people now are going to want to come see you as the roaster, right?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. How can you transfer that into, like, touring as a roaster? Like, Todd Barry did that amazing
crowd work tour,
you know, and stuff like that. What do you think? Yeah, I think you could do that, where maybe you go on the road and you do a half hour, and then you could roast audience guys.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough thing. Like, I mean, It's definitely, that's Jeff Ross's thing, so I have to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, he helped put, you know, he put me on the show. He gave me everything. So, you know, it's definitely, that's his stuff. You know, my crowd work is very roasty. I think it's just integrating it in, you know, because you don't want to be trapped, too. Like, I was a 10-year comic before I did this show.
Right.
And I still am after I do this show. And you'll get me just roasting naturally, but it's a thing of, you know, you don't want to get trapped in your gimmick.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, you want to get
people
what they
want. You don't
want to be in a box. Yeah, you know, and I think that my stand-up is similar, you know, but I would say, I mean, the big difference between writing stand-up and writing, you know, roast jokes is, like, roast jokes are so pointed. You know, stand-up can be about anything and go anywhere and have any length of time, but roast jokes, you know, have so many rules.
Absolutely.
And a focus.
Yeah.
You know who you're writing about. You know how long they should be. And, you know, and I like tinkering with the form a little bit. Like, I think that on the battle, you know, my style was a little different. You know, I tend to, like, be a little longer than some people. But it's a much riskier endeavor.
Yeah, because if it's wordy, people check out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think the best joke that I had, which was the one about Ralphie and how, like, his weight was the only thing he hadn't lost.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long joke.
It is a long joke. But the payoff was so big.
And that's, you know, I think to me, like, what makes a great roast joke is, you know, I mean, all comedy is tension and release. And I think, like, if you can have a good amount of tension so that the release really means something. And in a battle, you're releasing it onto somebody that's right next to you.
Yeah.
Which causes its own tension.
Yeah, right.
But I think
and there was some wave coming up going, ooh.
Oh, yeah.
A couple
of they're the release,
sounds.
Too. Yeah. They're the full release.
Yeah.
You know, because the whole show is nothing but tension. Like, that's why, you know, I know people, like, bash the wave on social media who had never seen the show. But that is the purpose they serve.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I love the wave, you know.
Absolutely.
The wave is all about to fucking, you know, like we were saying, when I was growing up, once you delivered that fucking joke, it was fists usually. After two or three, you know, you gotta be like, all right. But the wave, it gets the fists out of the way.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing.
Oh, yeah.
You, let's talk a little bit about, did you move out to L.A. for a while?
No.
No.
No, I'm a New Yorker. I'll be there eventually.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, you know, what Florida is for Jews, L.A. is for entertainers.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Where we all go to die.
I love New York, man. I've been here 14 days, and I'm just loving it, man.
I like it out there. I don't love it, you know. I don't drive, so.
Oh, yeah.
So that makes it tough.
Have you ever drove?
No.
Wow. Why is that? Because in Florida, you drive, right? People drive there.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah. No, my life's been rough.
Yeah.
I have a motor skill deficiency in my hands. I got a permit. I took the test. I haven't passed, you know.
Right.
I got to try it again. I gave up, but I got to get back on it.
Yeah. You'll get it.
Yeah.
You'll get it.
I'm just scared to die in L.A. because people will be thinking about themselves when they're looking at my death, and that's really sad to me.
Oh!
How can we make this about us?
Yeah, that's hilarious, right?
Yeah.
What, I was going to ask you this. Are you still writing on the Amy Schumer show?
Oh, no, we wrapped.
You wrapped?
In January, so.
That show's done?
For right now, I know there's supposed to be a season 5. I don't know when, but, you know, we're Emmy nominated, so that's exciting.
Yeah, that's badass. Now, how many years have you been working on that show? One year?
One year, yeah.
Yeah.
And she saw me at the Roast Battles originally.
Oh, in L.A.?
No, in New York.
Oh, in New York.
Yeah.
And then she asked you to work for her?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I wrote on another project for her, and then, you know, through that, you know, she was like, come to my show.
What's it like to write for other people? You and I were talking. You wrote all your roast jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
What's it like to write for other people? Do you get in their head of, like, their voice? Like, let's say you're writing for Amy Schumer.
Yeah, you know, you watch as much of their stuff as possible. You figure out what their parameters are. You know, you try to put some of your voice into it because that's why they hired you.
Right.
But, you know, it's ultimately volume. You know, you write a ton of stuff and hope they pick a few things.
Yeah, right. Know?
And I've written a ton of roast jokes for people. And that, like, you know, writing a sketch comedy show for someone is different because there's all these different, you know, levels of approval and fixing that can be done. But when you give someone a roast joke and they go out there, especially in a battle and it bombs, like, there's a guilt that you feel. There's a...
especially with now, with your level, they go, I'm loaded with some Mike Lawrence stuff here. Yeah. And then they fuck it up, you know? But it's a lot of delivery.
I'll tell you this, man. I've given, like, over 100 roast jokes to people on both coasts. And I ain't doing that for free anymore.
What would be the charge for that? Like, 100 a roast joke?
I think so.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, here's 4 jokes. Give me $400.
And there's people, too, that, like, I would, you know, like, you coddle them. Like, I would give them stuff too much. And then after a while, I was like, no, now you have to do it on your own. Because, you know, ultimately, like, the most important thing to me about writing my own roast jokes is the fact that whatever happens because of the show,
yeah,
I could say I earned, and you know.
Well, also, when you go to do something else, you're not going, fuck, I need these writers.
I know.
You're like, and it's going to be the same flavor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they go, and oh, we got Mike Lawrence.
When people get things not through their own means.
Oh, you get exposed
and then
quick.
Yeah.
You get exposed quick, man.
Yeah.
And you can see it a lot. And I think that's a total meltdown because the person thinks, oh, I'm in now, I've made it, and then it really backfires on them.
I think how you make it is so important, you know.
Absolutely.
Improving it, and you know, it's because
doing the work.
Well, that's also, no one ever like tells you this, but shit just gets harder.
It really does, man.
You know, it's like we all want our own TV show or movie, but you know. There's one thing to bomb at an open mic, but when your movie fails or your TV show fails, and that's hundreds of people with jobs that you're responsible for, and they don't get to work again, that's a lot of pressure.
That is a lot of pressure. Yeah, you absolutely. Know? Absolutely. Also, I think a lot of pressure is in stand-up. As you start, years go by, and you become, your thought of what's good is, it gets higher and higher, and then you're writing going, this ain't good enough, this ain't good enough, you know?
Oh, for sure. I think, you know, you write so much when you start because there's nothing but freedom.
Right.
And then the longer you do it, it's not only, like, do you feel like, all right, well, I've already done this and that, but you also hopefully become a better person.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like dead celebrity jokes and retard baby jokes and stuff like that you were willing to do when you were super young and desperate. You're like, you know.
Yeah. Shit
jokes.
I don't
think I live with myself. I'm married, you know. And it's like, oh, God. Someone has to, like, look at me doing those jokes on stage and be like, I sat on that face once. Like,
yeah.
I had to hope this shit has some dignity attached to it.
Yeah, it's a wild thing.
Absolutely.
What kind of offers you getting, man? You getting some show offers?
Yeah, you know, road dates and stuff.
Oh, road dates. That's right away. Wow.
Writing on the Robalo roast, you know. So,
oh,
like,
that's
different
great.
Stuff. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was talking to somebody. I don't know if it was Bobby Kelly or what, but I wish that the first prize, other than the 20, was to be able to roast on the Rob Lowe roast.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been fucking great?
Yeah.
First prize, you get to roast Rob Lowe with the Kings.
Yeah.
You know?
It is what it is. I'm writing. I'm good.
I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
What a cool style of thing that would have been. Like, holy shit, we get to see him again, and he's going to roast Rob Lowe.
Yeah, but it's also, if that was, like, the prize, imagine how many more people would have used writers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like, I think just having it be, like, some money,
right,
you know, added a fairness to it.
Yeah, totally. I get it.
I mean, I look at the writing thing like, you know, it's comedy doping. Like,
yeah.
I get it. I get why people do it, you know, for the same reason why they take pills.
Yeah.
You know, but after a while, then we have to decide, well, is this just going to be everyone doing this, or is no one going to be doing this?
That's true, because it's like, if you're just going to have outside riders all the time, then they're just going to get the shills of, like, this person looks good, and this is the type of person we want on here.
Yeah.
Here's your jokes, and go do it, you know? And
yeah.
I, you know, when I started comedy, I was pretty naive. I didn't know there was outside riders.
Yeah.
And I just thought, like, why? You know, to me, the whole thing about for stand-up for me is, oh, well, I fucking came up with this walking down the street, and it's starting to work now. It's the gold mining of that. My stuff that works is boring to me.
I get it, you know, like, especially when you're super famous.
When
and
you're
busy.
Super famous, it's different. I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
Because you got like 9 projects going.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, even in the competition, people are like, I don't want to lose.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, I would have rather got knocked out in the first round on my own shit than go to the end with someone else's. But that's me. Everyone's different.
Yeah, I played music all my life. I never wanted to play and be in a cover band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's
The
bottom line. What's the point of playing music? There's no art there.
You're playing music. You're not making it.
Yeah, exactly. 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 You into music?
Yeah.
What kind of music you into?
Pop. A lot of shitty pop.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's hilarious.
Yeah. I listen to so much like Kelly Clarkson, Prepping for the Battle, and
it's funny because you love Patton Oswalt, but then you love
Lord. Oh yeah, man! Especially like female-driven pop. I've been listening to a lot of Grimes. I just saw Florence and the Machine. She was amazing.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, she killed it.
What drives you to that? You think just a little bit of like decompress? Like what it is, what it is. Fuck it.
I love, like, I mean, like, Max Martin, I think, is the biggest genius in music in the past 15 years. He's, like, the producer that, wrote all the hits. And I think there's, like, a science to it.
It's like roasting. That's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah.
There really is a science to a pop hit. You got, and they're even getting it, like roasting, they're even cutting it down. They've almost gotten rid of the pre-chorus. Now it's just a little verse and then the big chorus.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's an agelessness to great pop music, whereas, like, you know, when I was in high school, I listened to, like, Bad Religion and, you know, Marilyn Manson, all this, like, angsty stuff that ages terribly. Like, even, look, I still think, like, Elliott Smith is, like, a brilliant songwriter.
Totally.
That stuff does not hold up.
Yeah. You don't think so?
I think it does in some way. I think it holds up now for people who are the kid that I was now.
Right. Yeah, that junior high troubled people.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Collective Soul, like Matchbox 20. I loved all that shit. And, you know, it just... And also, you listen Offspring. Like, you listen to it now.
Yeah.
And all you can think of is the person you were and how much you've changed. Whereas, like, I listen to, you know, New Radicals, You Get What You Give. And, like, I feel like there's something timeless about that. Or... Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Yeah.
Like it is certainly of its time, but it doesn't feel as stale as like Marilyn Manson.
Right. Right. That's an interesting thing. I really think that comedy and also the roast battle, I really feel has a lot in common with music and songwriting because it's dot 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 boom.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh, for sure, yeah. And just, you know, in the same way of like a pop song, you know, writing a great roast joke, every word matters and you're tweaking it like perfectly. And like, I look at like, I think one of the, you know, the best, you know, pop albums in the last few years is, you know, Taylor Swift's 1989. And the first single off that, Shake It Off, which I wrote my wedding vows to, Shake It Off. I listened to it on a loop and wrote about how much my wife means to me.
Wow.
It's the perfect fucking song. And that song is like, it gives you everything you want. It takes you in all these different places. You like the places it takes you. It stays there just enough for you to love them, but doesn't stay enough that you kind of miss when you go on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Like it's utterly, you know, and it's Max Martin. It's utterly a perfect song. And every word in it adds to the song and means something. You know, I think the same about, you know, her follow-up Blank Space.
Yeah. Did you like Ryan Adams' version of it?
I did, but, you know, like, he made some vocal changes that I didn't like. I thought it was good. I mean, and I loved Ryan Adams. You know, I used to listen to him a lot.
Yeah.
There's definitely, he definitely made it his own.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, he does do that. Like when he did Wonderwall years ago, that was spectacular.
But I think that Taylor's album has replay value. I didn't think that his did.
Yeah.
Like I listened to it once, I got what it was, that there's clearly, you know, a quality and a talent that he puts into that music, but it just didn't sustain for me.
Right.
He didn't even say haters gonna hate. He just said haters gonna hate. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, either do the song or don't.
Yeah, haters gonna hate.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, now you just got married. How long you been with your girl? Did you meet her in Florida or out here?
No, I met her on OKCupid out here.
Wow.
New York. Yeah, she's from Cleveland.
And how many dates did you go on with other people on OKCupid?
At least 50.
50. And
there were my other open mics. I would do comedy and bomb at that. And I'd go on these dates and bomb at that.
Mm. Yeah. What were some of the bad bombs on the dates?
Oh, man. It was just, you know, the big thing was like telling people about like, you know, being a comic, but then they'd ask how much money I made it and just looking at the floor and getting really sad. And,
wow. That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
How much money you make on the first fucking date?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they want to know what you do for a living.
Yeah, people always ask me that. Hey, how much money you make in comedy? It's like, what are you talking about, man?
Yeah.
It should be, how happy are you doing comedy?
Yeah.
That's what you should ask.
Yeah.
Now, you guys live out in...
Dimmis Park.
Hey, was that the fucking... That looked like the dude from Seinfeld.
Oh, wow.
The Jerry that he just went in. We'll see if it is him when he comes out. The heavy
guy
dude
from Seinfeld?
Yeah, the heavy dude. What's his name?
Newman?
Yeah, Newman.
Looked like Newman. Oh, wow. Wayne Knight, great actor.
Now, you live out there that's by Coney Island. I went to Coney Island today, but what made you pick out there?
It's just cheap and huge.
Huge?
Yeah.
You mean the apartment?
Is really big for what you pay, yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
How much you pay?
$13.
$13? For a one bedroom or something?
Yeah.
That's fucking great.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little far, but it's nice.
I haven't heard 13 yet here.
Yeah.
So you got a one bedroom, and how's the neighborhood?
It's great. It's gentrified just enough to feel guilty, but not enough that you don't feel completely evil.
And how long does it take you to get into the city?
It took me 45 minutes to get here.
Oh, that ain't bad. On the train?
Yeah.
You ever ride that Cyclone? I was there today.
Yeah, I just did recently.
Man, it's fucking fast, right?
Yeah.
I was stunned.
Did you go in the back car?
Yeah, I went the back car.
Yeah, that's,
And I was solo, and I tell you what, it slammed me fucking back and forth. I couldn't believe how radical it was. The speed and shit.
Yeah, it's bonkers. It was 1927 or something.
Yeah, 1927.
Yeah. Kumail has a great bit about that.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, but why are we still riding a thing made of wood, you know?
Yeah.
This is not safe.
God, I love it, man. I love that whole boardwalk. It reminds me of the movie The Warriors.
Oh, yeah. The first great date I had with my wife, we went to Coney Island that night, and it was magical.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and we'd already finished the date, and then we looked at a sign that said, it was Memorial Day weekend. It was visit Coney Island. And, you know, we were let's just go now. And we had our first kiss there. It was one of the most amazing experiences of my life.
Wow, that's fucking great. And did you guys ride rides and shit?
No, it was 3 in the morning.
Oh, you just went and hung out there.
Yeah, yeah.
What's that place like at 3 a.m.? It's just all locked up and you can walk around the boardwalk?
We sat on the lifeguard tower and watched these Hasidic Jewish boys try to hit on black girls. It was amazing.
Wow.
And just laughing about it. It was great.
Are you close to that place?
I'm pretty close. Yeah, 20 minutes.
Wow, that's I went out there today and just felt magic out there.
It is magical.
I'm such a roller coaster freak, you know?
Yeah.
You like coasters?
I like them. I don't love them, but the history of that place.
That's what I like, the history.
Although, I'm too old to go to the freak show. I just feel bad for
them.
They
had a freak show there?
Yeah.
Oh, they do? Fuck, I missed that.
Well, that was funny. I watched, they bark you in, at a comedy club.
Right.
And they just had, this little fat person. And you could tell he's, totally not into it. He wants to be anywhere else.
Oh, I missed that. I got to go back out there. And is that on in the middle of the midway?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I'm so bummed I missed that. I love weird shit like that. Like when I was young, that one, like remember Jim Rose Side Circus?
Yeah.
When I was young, like really young, shitty version of that would come into town, pull up into a grocery store parking lot, and it'd be like Snake Woman and Bearded Woman and Sword Swallower and all those fucking people.
Yeah, but now it's like, oh, I'm just fat shaming, or oh, I'm just judging this, but like I'm just feeling bad about this. Look at that. He's born differently.
It does not survive
PC culture.
You could go in there and roast. Classic. It does not survive PC culture. You're right. Are you a fan of PC or no?
I think in some ways, you know, like I think it's forced us to be more creative, you know.
Right.
Like I don't think things are off limits, but I also think, you know, you should try to be a good person. Like when I roast battle, like I ask permission from everybody, like what they don't want me to say and things like that. I think, you know, there's crossing a line, but then there's also like going too far. And I do think that you can go too far sometimes.
Yeah. And you that's know. Going too far. Do you think it would be if you asked them what they didn't want you to do and then you did it?
Well, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's certain subjects, you know, like if you make personal attacks about someone's children, I think that's inappropriate.
Yeah.
You know, or family members, like if you just go up and talk about how ugly someone's mom is, like, yeah, you can do that. But do you want to be that person? I don't know.
Yeah.
If they're like real facts, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. When I was growing up, it was all your mama. That's how it started. Your mama's so fat. That, you know, mama's so ugly. Your mama smells so bad. You know, that's all it was.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely wild. I got to say thanks for doing the show, man.
Of course, buddy. It was great.
And
thanks for having me.
I really enjoyed my time in New York with all the New York comics.
You got it, man.
And you hanging out. And I'm looking forward to watching what else you do in
thanks,
your career,
man. I appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you so much. Where can everyone find you?
You can find me at the Mike Lawrence on Twitter, and MikeLawrenceComedy.com is my website.
Got an Instagram or anything?
I do. I believe it's Mike Lawrence Comedy, and then my podcast is Nerd of Mouth, and we talk about all sorts of comic book movies and stuff like that.
Did you see Suicide Squad?
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
It's absolutely awful.
I was with Keith Robinson last night. He goes, man, I'm going to see the worst movie ever, and I'm already tired. He was like, why am I going?
Yeah.
And I said, so you could say you saw the worst movie ever.
Yeah. It's up there.
Yeah. I thought Brown Bunny was the worst movie ever.
Yeah.
And it still holds up.
Well, it was jaw-dropping to Roger Ebert.
Yeah. Where is your podcast at? On iTunes?
Yeah, on Cave Comedy Radio Network.
Nerd of Mouth.
Yeah.
Thank you so much,
man.
Thank you,
buddy.
Rock and roll. There you guys go. Right there, Mike Lawrence. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. All right, that was part one with Mike Lawrence. Fantastic. Let's get into part two right now with my man Sam Anderson from Quaker City Nighthawks. All right, here we are, another episode of Let There Be Talk. Great guest today. Introduce yourself.
My name is Sam Anderson, and I play in a band called Quaker City Nighthawks.
Yeah, just saw your set. What an incredible show.
Oh, thank you so much.
We're here at The Resident, downtown L.A. I've never been here. This venue is fantastic.
It is incredible.
I know. I can't believe it. It's like you and I were saying, it's like an Austin kind of venue, kind of Stubbs vibe.
Yeah, super tight spot.
It's got like a huge outdoor area, which if you don't even want to come to the show, you can come here. And drink.
It could completely ignore us, and you'd be totally fine out here.
Yeah, isn't that? I mean, I saw these people out here, and I was like, hey, you here for the show? And they're like, show? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hilarious, but inside's a whole fucking killer thing going on.
Yeah.
Great set. I love the record. Mark Maron turned me on to you guys about a couple months ago. He was like, oh, man, you got to hear this great band. And he and I always go back and forth on that. He's all, Quaker, look them up. Hold on. Quaker City Nighthawks. And I was like, that can't be the name. You know what I mean?
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. And I looked it up and immediately listened to it at the Comedy Store in the hallway there. And I was like, oh, these guys are fucking great.
Hell yeah.
Killer album cover. Great sound. Third record out right now.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to going backwards, finding you guys.
Yep.
Now, third record, brand new one, El Astronauta?
That's it. El Astronauta.
El Astronauta.
We've had about every pronunciation of that you could imagine.
Yeah.
Come across there. So.
How do you come up with that title?
It's actually, if you look up the Nazca Lines down in South America, one of the big, you know, formations that they have down there is one of them is called El Astronauta, the astronaut. And it's something that supposedly was, you know, created centuries and centuries ago, and then, you know, looks like this very modern astronaut, and it's a little mystery shrouded around it. And then we've always kind of had strange album titles too, so in keeping with the theme, we
right.
El Astronauta.
What's the first and second one called?
The first one's called Torquila, Torquila.
Yep.
And then the second one's called Honcho.
Honcho.
Yeah.
Now, I just watched your set, and I've been rocking this record, Mockingbird, incredible. My favorite song on the record is that Why Can't I Be the One You Came Here For?
Something to Burn.
What a fucking song, man.
Oh, thank you, man.
And you played a song tonight I don't know, and I asked, and I guess it's a new one, the really drony one towards the end. Rattlesnake, yeah. I guess it's called?
Rattlesnake Boogie.
What a great fucking song.
Thank you so much, man.
That thing's really like, it's almost psychedelic, drony, kind of almost... Doors, you know, like it's really monotone.
Definitely dips into that trancey type of thing where gets you lost inside of the riff there.
What a fucking great song! Now that's a new song.
We recorded that one back on Honcho, but I think it might be something we're looking into re-recording and.
Oh, so you recorded it on Honcho? Mm-hmm. Wow, what a great fucking song!
Oh, thank you.
Now, let's get a little history on your band, because I've just found out about it, and you've got three records out, which, by the way, man, you know, every fucking day it seems like there's some great music going on, man. I mean, I can't stop saying this over and over and over to people.
It's pretty thick right now. There's a lot of stuff coming out, a lot of volume, but not just volume quality too.
Yeah, there is a lot of quality. Yeah. You're out on tour with Sheepdogs, which I love, and interviewed last year, and was and just pumping them like crazy. Them and Rival Sense for a couple years.
Yeah.
But now, like I was telling you, all them witches.
Incredible band.
Yeah, it's a great band. I love your guys' record right now, and there's a bunch of records that I'm just like, wow, I can't believe it. You know, Orchid.
Yeah.
Great band.
Yeah.
So you were in a band before that was kind of psychedelic?
Yeah. I played in a band called Epic Ruins. And
out of Fort Worth?
Yeah, we were out of Fort Worth. There's like 12 people involved in that whole thing at any given time.
Wow.
We actually played out here. One of our first shows in L.A. was at Spaceland, I guess Satellite now.
Still and together, so like, this band?
We are not broken up, but we haven't played shows in a while. It's kind of like planning a shuttle launch,
right?
Getting that group together. So,
yeah.
But that was my first foray into LA scene out there. Was
what's the style
with
of that band?
It's a lot heavier, but it leans psychedelic too, and
kind of Caius or Uncle Acid stuff like that.
Pink Sabbath.
Wow. Like Animals era, that kind of shit.
Yeah, we pull a lot from that. Yeah.
Wow.
Definitely a lot of that stuff. The two primary songwriters on that were Jordan Richardson, who played drums for Ben Harper for quite a while.
Oh, yeah, great.
He's now going on the road with White Denim.
Yeah, White Denim, great band.
And then Steve Stewart, and he plays in a band called Oil Boom now.
Yeah.
But he's a bass player, and those two kind of wrote the lion's share of the songs, and their kind of influence was definitely like a lot of Sabbath stuff, a lot of Pink Floyd, like late era dancey Zeppelin stuff like Carousel Ombra and some of that.
They got records
into the outdoor stuff. We have one record out called The Void Mariner.
Uh-huh.
And
is it on iTunes?
I don't know if it's up anywhere. I think it's only in vinyl format. I think Jordan let the iTunes renewal lapse. So I don't know if it's anywhere online, but
I'll look on YouTube or something.
Yeah, there's some YouTube of it for
sure. Yeah. Wow, that's cool. Now, what's the background of you? You're Fort Worth, Texas. How old are you? I'm looking at you, dude.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show you a picture. You are me, 1992.
Yeah.
It's so creepy. When I walked up, I go, whoa, that's me. Because someone just sent a photo of me in my band back in the day.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, you look like me in 92.
Yeah.
It's fucking funny. What is your deal? You grew up in Fort Worth?
Grew up in Fort Worth, Texas. I'm 31 now. Although if I shave, I get carded for R-rated movies.
Yeah.
But we're all right about the same age in the band.
Four-piece band. Uh-huh. Two singers.
We met in Fort Worth, I guess 10 years ago, playing under different bands and stuff like that. And then Dave and I did a lot of acoustic stuff for a while, a lot of blues
stuff.
Dave's
the other guitar player.
He's, and the other primary songwriter, too.
Yeah, great singer. Two singers. You guys split lead vocal duties.
That definitely helps on the road, too.
Yeah. Kind of mother hip style.
Yeah. But we were doing a lot of acoustic shows at the time, and I think we were getting sick of being talked over, so we decided to start a loud rock and roll band so that everyone had to shut the fuck up. So
Yeah. Now, what are some of your influences? I catch a little maybe Kris Kristofferson in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I get some Robin Trower.
Yeah.
Your amps, you're playing Peavey.
All Peavey.
Yeah, which is Skinnerd.
Yeah, we've got all
that on purpose, Peavey?
Well, all the solid state stuff, not a lot of people want it for one reason or another, but they're great. It's all late 70s Peavies, and they sound incredible. They're really loud, especially for on the road, too. You could cartwheel them out of the trailer and they'll still turn on. You're not worried about somebody dumping a beer inside one.
Yeah. You're playing 612s cabinets.
Yeah.
And your head looks like a fucking PA head.
It is, yeah.
From like the 60s.
Old standard 240s.
That is a nut. Like, would you play that if you had some cash? Would you use that still?
Yeah. I mean, if anyone's out there open to giving us some super legit gear, we'll play that for sure. But for right now, I mean, it's not necessarily just a monetary choice. We like the sound of them. They're super loud, and you can make them sound however they want. It's kind of like a blank canvas. So
Yeah. That's amazing. Were you a Skinnerd guy? I think Skinnerd gets a lot of bad rap.
Yeah, that's one of those. The fans kind of ruin the band for some people.
Yeah. It's funny, and also Freebird, you know.
Yeah, that
which is an incredible fucking song.
Incredible song.
Try writing Freebird.
Yeah.
Try writing Freebird or fucking Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
You're not gonna do it, you know. But my point is, Skinnerd is one of the fucking best bands ever.
Absolutely.
And I mean, they like as much as people clown on them, if you just take like Needle, you know, what is it? Don't Mess with the Needle and the Spoon. That song. If you get into those kind of fucking songs, you know, early stuff. Other than the hits, it's incredible.
Yeah, one of the saltiest live bands you could probably ever see back then, too. They really laid it down live. So.
Oh, man. Like, they opened for the Stones.
Yeah.
And at Nebworth, you know, I guess it was Nebworth or whatever, but you can watch it on YouTube, and they just smoked it.
Yeah.
Just smoked it.
That song, Give Me Back My Bullets, is one of my favorites.
Oh, I love that.
That's a riff monster.
Bang, you know. What a great song. All their tunes.
Yeah.
You know, and their vibe.
They're a lot more funky than people give them credit for.
They really were.
They think, when you think Skinnerd, you immediately think maybe a little bit sketchy Southern stuff, maybe some racist overtones.
Some Southern flags.
Like you think NASCAR, and but really, they were a pretty funky band. Politics aside, they were... They laid it down pretty well, but also fuck that flag.
yeah, absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Now, Fort Worth, Texas, what kind of scene goes there?
It's really across the board. Fort Worth's a really cool place to be right now. You know, everyone's heard of Austin.
Of course.
When you think of Texas, live music capital, Austin. But Fort Worth's got a really cool scene. We call it kind of a working man scene.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of bands in a lot of different genres. It's not really just pigeonholed into, you know, Fort Worth's nickname is Cowtown, and of course there's a lot of country and western music there, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's a really good punk scene going on right now, like a really good kind of underground, like a little, you know, surfy, that wavy punk scene going on right now.
Are people going out to the clubs to see bands?
There's a bunch of really small venues. There's not a lot of overwhelmingly large places, so you're not going to see like a necessarily a whole bunch of like 1500 cap rooms.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Billy Bob's, which is gigantic, which is like the honky tonk there. But there's a bunch of like 200, 300 cap rooms that are just solid places to see shows. Especially, you'll get some touring acts come through that might be a little bit smaller of a place than they're used to playing, but that's a really cool spot to see them too. But there's not a shortage of bands in Fort Worth right now.
That's badass. Plenty. What did you grow up listening to? What's your background? What turns you on to music? Because You know, I really like the sound of the band. But was that what you were into early on? Because I originally was into rock, of course.
Right.
And then later start getting into alt country. And then, you know, now I'm a full-blown fucking Deadhead in the last year.
We're big Grateful Dead fans. Growing up, I listened, of course, a lot to what my parents listened to, which is my dad was big into, you know, Creedence and my mom was really big into Carole King and
Tapestry.
Linda Ronstadt.
One of the best records ever.
I think. And then, so I had that background, but then I guess the first music that really spoke to me, like, that was from my generation, was I really liked R&B music.
Yeah.
Like, I really had an affinity.
Were you into Otis Redding?
Yeah, but then, like, the stuff that was coming out that was recent whenever I was a kid, so, like, Babyface.
And stuff like that.
Like, so
Holy shit.
That was the first thing that, like, I was like, oh, this is current. And I like this.
Well, hit songs.
Yeah.
Really good hit songs.
And just stuff like that back in the day turned my eye to the stuff that I liked in rock and roll. The reason I liked it, I didn't know at the time, was because it had some of this, you know, this R&B, you know, little backbeat swing in it. And
yeah.
That was the stuff that really turned me on as far as the first.
Well, I'm such a Curtis Mayfield freak,
oh, man.
You know.
Yeah.
I think that he's one of the best of all fucking time.
Yeah.
And what a style. I mean, you know, and I found him kind of backwards, you know, from Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
You get into this falsetto vocal, and then Lenny Kravitz covered Billy Jack.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I'm like, holy shit. You know, R&B is incredible. I talk about it a lot. I love Earth, Wind & Fire,
mm-hmm.
Lakeside, even, you know, Funkadelic.
Funkadelic. Big fan.
Talk about like just funk version of Frank Zappa,
know? I love that, man.
Yeah, I love
Maggot Brains and all that is just
the lunacy of that stuff.
Incredible.
So you're listening to R&B, so what, in like junior high or something?
Yeah, I guess it's like sixth grade, starting in that area, just kind of wanting to start, you know. I didn't hate the music my parents listened to, but you know, you get to that age and you're like, man, I want to start having my own stuff that I listen to, you know, and my first concert I actually ever went to was Babyface and Boyz II Men.
That's hilarious.
So I remember it fondly. I enjoyed it quite a bit. So
that is amazing to look at you and to hear the music you're playing.
Yeah.
But I think that, of course, everybody rebels against their parents' music.
Yeah.
But then you realize that, oh, that shit's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
And whatever opens the door for you, being a live concert, whoever it is, it'll grab certain people. And then they become musicians.
Yeah.
It's interesting that Babyface and Boyz II Men, there's no musicians in there.
Yeah.
It's
singers.
Singers.
Babyface is a pretty good guitar player.
Absolutely.
He can hold his own.
When you go live.
Yeah, they do.
Babyface played a little acoustic live.
Normally just singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What gets you into getting an instrument and all of a sudden into the style of music you're playing?
I've always been fascinated with guitar. I didn't start playing until I was 18.
Right.
But I was always fascinated with it, and then just the amount of sounds you could make with six strings was kind of mind-blowing to me. And to be honest with you, a really big, a stimulus in my life as far as guitar playing was David Matzer, the other guy in our band. When I met him, he was in South Plains Bluegrass College. He was a mandolin major.
Wow.
And he was out there, and he, of course, he's a phenomenal guitar player. Anything with strings on it, that guy speaks that language.
Well, he really underplays in this band.
Yeah.
You know, and I noticed that you guys really underplay. It's not like, here comes the Allman Brothers solos and stuff like that. Is that on purpose?
Yeah. We're all very much about each song, and we love, you know, Allman Brothers and stuff like that, where there's these big soaring solos and these giant, you know, instrumental sections. But we're more interested in the way all of those blend together, and you know, Dave has the chops to solo all night long if he wants to, but
right.
I think that restraint is kind of what I like about our band.
Absolutely.
Is that gives everything room to breathe to where you're focusing on more than just one part.
I noticed it after about the third song. I said, it's not much soloing going on here. And me coming off just a 3 weeks of just Grateful Dead fucking every day, all day.
Yeah.
It is a different change and a nice change, you know? Because at the end of the day, it comes down to songs only, you know? That's what it's about.
Yeah.
You can solo all you want, but I won't remember it if I don't like the song.
Right.
You know?
It's all about the memorable, the hook. You know?
Absolutely.
Where's it at?
The ultimate songwriting, like we're talking about, Tapestry, Carole King's record, could be some of the best songs ever wrote.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
That's, there's no question about that. Those are
and
some
that
of my
shit
favorite.
The Eagles guys did with Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah.
That Living in the USA and
the Stone Ponies, I guess that was their name when they were playing with Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah, fucking crazy, right?
Yeah. That's a hell of a band, too, that a lot of people give.
That's the same thing.
Because they watch The Big Lebowski, and they don't realize that's a movie character, and it's supposed to be funny that he doesn't like the Eagles, because nobody doesn't like the Eagles.
Well, also, there was a time where hipsters really shit on him, and they were all into the Burrito Brothers.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, really? What burrito song do you like? You know what I mean? It was just, like, cool to like the Burrito
Brothers.
Streets
of Baltimore? You're like,
It's just like, you know, you cannot fucking deny the Eagles. And if you try, you're an idiot. Because, first of all, they looked cool as fuck. They all had mustaches.
Yeah,
they played 59
incredible
Les Pauls. Yeah. They slayed the songwriting. These guys wrote more hits than anyone. They got the number one selling greatest hits of all time.
The musicianship in that band is
it's unbelievable.
Unrivaled. That is an incredible, incredible band.
You know?
I've always been an unapologetic Eagles fan. Like,
oh.
I don't. It's not a guilty pleasure for me. It's just a regular pleasure.
I
enjoy the hell out of the
say.
Eagles. So.
I'll tell you, I think the long run is way underrated.
Yeah.
Way underrated. The long run,
I can't tell you why. That's an R&B song right there.
Oh, man.
It's an R&B song.
I can't tell you.
Yep.
Man, that guy's great.
Incredible. Timothy B. Schmidt.
Yep.
Great addition to the band right there.
They scored on him because the other guy
was from
great, too. And he fucking sang great.
Yeah, I think he was playing for Bread and Coke and Poco, so I think he was pretty stoked to probably make a little dough with the Eagles there.
Yeah, the other bass player went crazy.
I think he had a little bit of a breakdown there.
Yeah, cocaine.
Yep.
You got it, man. Did you ever get into coke?
No, man.
Man.
That's not for me. I'm not a go-fast guy.
Yeah, you're a slow guy?
I like to relax.
You're into weed?
Yeah.
You ever do any dope or anything?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. Just the...
Just a little weed?
Oh, yeah. We've been on this tour through the Northwest.
Oh, yeah.
Which has been...
People love bringing free weed, right?
It's been phenomenal.
It's great, right? They're like,
the
man,
Northwest.
You were great. Here you go. And they hand you just... they hand you weed for 9 dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're like, man, we gotta drive to Texas tomorrow where you'll go to... This is a felony. Like,
yeah, right?
Can't be having this on us. We gotta ditch that. Like,
it's so weird. You go state to state and it's weed, such different things. Now, your new record, who did it? Who produced it? And where'd you do it?
We did it out at Modern Electric Sound Recorders in Dallas.
Yeah.
It's Jeff Sine's place, and we did it with a guy named Bo Bedford. We co-produced it with him. And like I said, we started this album, recorded about half of it, almost three quarters of it, and then scrapped it. It wasn't going the way we wanted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then after about a year in the process, re-recorded it at a different spot, and I think that gave the songs... We played them live during the whole time.
Right.
We were touring a lot while we were recording, so we were playing these songs live rather than just sitting on them, and I think that this feels like the most fully realized record that we've ever done, because those songs had time to like actually be in front of people, and they changed so much after you do that. Like,
that's amazing you said that, because you could go into studio, a lot of people don't know this, but you put money down and you pay, and a lot of people go, you start to know, and you have to admit to yourself, we got to fucking take the loss.
Yeah.
We got to eat the dick here, man. This ain't working.
And that's hard, too, when you don't have a lot of money.
Right,
so,
exactly.
You know,
exactly. When you have no money, you've dug a hole. Now, are you on a label? Did you tell the label, like, hey, we're out of here?
Man, what's been great is we kind of were being courted and courting this label while this whole process was going on. And our buddy Logan, he's actually sitting to my left right here, Lightning Rod Records, is who we wound up going with. And he was so patient through the whole process. We kept him in the loop, you know, hey, we've got it started, but I think we're going to scrap it and start over again. And we didn't get any guff as far as that goes. And we sent him the final product, and it was, being with them has been a match made in heaven.
That's fucking
Logan's
great.
Logan's been great on that. And then they distribute through 30 Tigers. So, you know, we've we have zero complaints right now.
That's so great. This record is exactly what you need in a band. A lot of street talk, a lot of word of mouth, a lot of grassroots action. Yeah. Because I'm telling people everywhere I was on the road just now, I just got home, and I'm telling everybody about it, you know? Now, who did the artwork? It's so far out.
Man, this is my favorite thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Our buddy Calvin Abasejo and Ray Liberio, they have a group called Pussy House Propaganda.
Uh-huh.
And they've done all of our artwork from day one.
Wow.
And they're from Fort Worth, the same area we're from, specifically out of Haltom City, which is the first place I was from, too. And they, we just give them the music.
Yeah.
Zero art direction whatever whatsoever. We just give them the songs, and then they come back with stuff like that.
Wow. So, two dudes do it?
They both do the rendering.
Like the Clayton Brothers or something, you know?
It's incredible. We are constantly surprised when we send shit to them and get it back. We're like, oh, my God.
It's so psychedelic. I love it, man.
They're incredible. They're incredible. They do one of my favorite posters of all time. They're in a band. Ray's in a band called The Methinks back home. Check out The Methinks.
Yeah.
It's like very Motorhead, very all in that vein. But they did a poster with Dr. Zaius, but he's got breasts.
Yeah.
And he's got his shirt off, and he's leaning up against a hot rod. It's one of my favorite posters
Planet
of all time.
Planet of the Apes?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Badass. The blonde one.
They do. they did a poster for us where it is the planet. It's Dr. Zaius pulling off a mask, and underneath he's Alfred E. Newman from...
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, I saw that, actually. They do incredible stuff, too.
Wow. Now, what are your thoughts on social media? You know, I like to ask guys, because if I looked at you, I'd think this guy's not into social media, but it's a double-edged sword, right?
Yeah, it's a... For us, it's a necessary...
Absolutely.
...monster like that we have to do. I love it because I kind of like to poke the bear a little bit, and it kind of seems like a pretty good vehicle for that as far as a slight trolling going on.
You get some trolling?
I kind of like to do the trolling.
Oh,
a little
you
bit,
troll?
That's more, not hard. Just people that deserve it.
Like, you go at a band and say, hey, that's some bullshit or something?
I've had a long going on my personal Twitter with Pastor Ed Young. He's like a... Super church, you know, like a mega church pastor.
It's
kind of fun to razz him every now and again. Because why not?
Yeah, like, are you a religious guy now?
I grew up, my father was a preacher growing up, so I grew up very much in the church.
No shit.
Yeah.
Sam Kinison was your dad, huh?
Yeah. But, and he's super supportive, you know, like my family is very supportive.
That's great.
Like that,
that's great.
Yeah.
What kind is it? Is it like Pentecostal? Church of Christ.
It's very, very strict as far as traditional Church of Christ goes. No dancing.
Whoa.
No instruments.
Well, you're Footloose.
Yeah, I am.
No dancing.
Basically,
no instruments.
Kevin Bacon. Yeah.
Wait a minute, but you do both those.
Yeah.
Did you have to hide them and sneak them?
No, not from my family's always been supportive of it 100%. And then they're not. My dad is a very progressively minded human being.
But he's
never
still
had
part of that church.
He's no longer preaching anymore. He is also a coach. Taught Bible, but he coached basketball and baseball and football. So
right.
Classic triple threat right there.
Yeah, right. Are you a religious guy yourself now or no?
Not much.
As far as...
No attendance regularly.
Comedy's my religion,
yeah.
You know? You're into comedy, you said. We were talking earlier.
Fan. Yeah.
And how did Maron find out about you? Did you email him or send him a record or something?
That's another one thing I think our
distributor
record label, Logan Rogers at our record label, I think he sent him a copy of the record. But we were actually in Nashville for a batch of shows, about to do an in-store at Grimey's.
Yeah.
And we were eating at this Thai food place in Nashville, and I get a little alert on my phone. Look down, I was like... No shit.
Yeah.
Like, we just got mentioned by Mark. That's incredible. And stuff like that for a band like us.
That's fucking huge. That's
huge, you know? Like,
he changed my career.
Yeah.
Had me on the podcast, my life changed.
Yeah, he's been
And as
great.
A friend, my life changed too, you know? So that's amazing, man, right? And then you start seeing the retweets, yeah. And all of a sudden you're going, whoa, and then people are probably buying the record away and listening to it.
Instant growth right there. You see immediately off of it.
Now, one pretty cool thing you were telling me, and I noticed when you went on, Gibson Guitars asked you guys to come over.
Yeah.
And you thought it was just going to be a meeting to look at some guitars at half price or something.
Yeah,
and
which we still couldn't afford.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. I know. Half price is Gibson. Yeah, it's right? still a house in Philly.
That's a car I'd drive.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. But they fucking gave you guys guitars there on the spot.
Yep, they're on indefinite loan to us at the time. So
did you get to pick any guitar you wanted?
Pretty much they gave us the run of the batch that they had going on there. But we were pee pants excited. We had no clue that was going to happen. So, you know.
Did you play a few before you chose yours?
Yeah, I played around on three or four of them. Dave did as well, and so did Pat. And we found some that we really liked. And really, we were in our brains, we weren't deciding on guitars we were going to get to take. We were just...
Yeah.
Stoked to get to go to the Gibson showroom, play all the nice guitars.
Where at? Nashville?
In Austin.
Oh, Austin. They got one out there?
Yep. Our contact, Cody, she's been great, and she's hooked us up with...
Now, what's the one you got? It's beautiful.
I got a Sheridan.
Yeah, it's so cool.
All the old gold hardware, which is I'm a sucker for. So
I can't wait to see that thing a couple years down the road, man, when it's just got some fucking beer, sweat, and grime on it.
I put a little bit of that on there on this... We've been on this tour with the Sheepdogs, and
that's a great.
Although we haven't been sweating much because it's been in the Northwest. It's been. I check the weather every day we're gone on the road, and it's like 100 and fuck back home.
Oh,
every
God.
Day we're.
I was just
like
in 103.
It's like 109 the other day while we were in Tahoe.
Oh.
I was like, don't feel bad. We're in Tahoe where it's 60 right now. So
I was in New York and it was an absolute ball sweat fucking oven of humidity. It would be 90 and you would go down into the subway and just be like, oh, this is hell.
Yeah.
This is absolutely where hell is.
Doesn't help that it smells like garbage juice either.
Oh,
it's just like
just fucking
terrible.
The smells of the street are the bully.
It's pushes you around.
Yeah, yeah. It'll
make you move to the other side of the sidewalk.
Full-blown bully, the stench.
There's nothing worse to you when you get like some sort of street food going on and you hit one of those little microbursts of warm just shit air.
Yeah.
And it hits your food and you're like, I got to throw this away now.
Yeah, it's so gross.
Trash air on my food.
What comics you into?
We're big fans. I'm a big local comic fan. Back in Fort Worth, there's a lot of sharp people. Josh Johnson, who's up and coming.
That's cool. What's the club there?
Chris Darden. Sadly enough, there's not a lot. There's Hyenas in Arlington.
Oh, that's great.
And there's like 4-day weekend, and they have some stuff downtown in Fort Worth. But there's a lot of small. Like they put it in a lot of smaller places where there's like music venues having people out, like Chris Darden and Chris Cubis from Austin's been really cool. We met him with Doug Benson at a
Doug
show.
Doug Benson, great guy.
Big fans of Doug. He was at we played with Shooter Jennings in Dallas.
Oh, wow.
And Chris Cubis and Doug Benson were there, and we got to meet them, and we actually drank moonshine with them.
No shit.
Backstage, and hope we gave them a little piece of Fort Worth there. That was
that's
kind of
fucking
drinking.
Cool.
You don't get to drink out of a jar every day with
moonshine.
Some of your favorite comedians.
I love that.
Yeah.
You ever go to the Arlington Guitar Show?
Oh yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's the biggest one in the world.
It's huge. It's gigantic.
It is the biggest.
That's the best place. The sleeper thing to buy there is guitar straps.
Straps.
Everything's so expensive, but no one gives a shit about the guitar straps. There's like a box of 100 at each little booth for like $5 each. You go to Guitar Center, a guitar strap's $70.
It's
bullshit, like,
right?
You know, I'm not gonna get rid of $70 for one of those.
Fuck
but
that.
No.
Hey, I noticed Dave, you know, my big sponsor is Earthquaker Devices.
Oh man, we're huge fans.
Fucking
of that
great
stuff.
Shit,
that's,
right?
Top notch stuff
right
so
there. It's so cool, and this ain't some bullshit commercial I'm doing.
No.
But I love their stuff, and I love those people, and it was great to hear it tonight live real loud,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, man.
Dave was really rocking a few of them.
And he's a pedal aficionado. He knows his shit as far as that goes, and he spends a lot of time, you know, honing pedals in like that. And he's also, like, somewhat of a pedal dealer.
Oh, yeah?
He buys and sells stuff. Like, when I first met him, that was, like, I think that was how he's making a living was buying and selling stuff at pawn shops. He's just got a good nose for that type of thing and knows what's good. So
yeah, pedals. are easy to buy on the road because you can carry them, you know, without, like, I used to buy blackface amps on the road.
Yeah. Oh, that's where these PVs come from.
Oh, yeah.
We go up through the Midwest where they're like $100 each. So you're just like, well, fill the trailer up, you know.
Fill the trailer up. You guys got day jobs still, or?
No, this is full time for us.
Wow. So, yeah. That's fucking amazing. What's rent like in Fort Worth?
Cheap.
Yeah?
That's why we haven't moved yet.
You guys all live in one house?
No, we all kind of live separately, but Fort Worth is extremely affordable.
Like, what is it for a one-bedroom?
Like, a one-bedroom, you can get around the $400 or $500 range.
Whoa!
I'm telling you, it's cheap, man.
That is fucking great.
I live right by the cultural district, right by all the... We've got great museums in Fort Worth. World-famous museums.
Really?
Yeah.
What ones?
Kimball Art Museum is one of the most... You know, world-renowned museums there too, but they're all kind of clumped there, right in the same area. And I live not too far from there. It's a nice area. I'm definitely not living high on the hog or anything like that.
Yeah,
but it's a nice place, and it's $500 a month.
That's fucking amazing. Gas has got to be $1.50.
Yeah, it's a lot. Everything's just a lot cheaper down there, and it's grown a lot. It's gotten like it's starting to trend the other direction right now. I guess.
Everywhere grows where it's cheap.
Yep.
Because people go, I'm going to live here. It's cheap. And then it's not cheap anymore.
R.E. Austin, Texas, where that used to be a cheap place to live. I can't hardly afford to spend a week there nowadays.
It's fucking crazy, man. Anywhere there's techies, it's going to fucking be stupid.
Yep.
Alternative offices.
And
what do you guys got coming up? You're out on a tour with Sheepdogs.
Yep. We have a show with Chris Stapleton down in New Braunfels.
Oh, really?
That's where we're heading after this.
Wow. After tonight?
We'll be in Santa Fe tomorrow and then heading down to New Braunfels for that show.
Wow. One show with him?
Uh-huh. We've done some with him before, too.
You know him?
Yeah. He is the sweetest human.
Wow.
Just him and his wife are just salt of the earth.
And he loves your band?
Yeah. We played a show with them in Dallas, and they actually came out and... In the band world, this doesn't happen a lot. Especially we've gotten a lot of opening slots, especially recently, where we're opening for a lot bigger names.
Like who?
Like Shooter Jennings.
Oh yeah.
Stapleton's.
Dope.
But shows like that, you know, you hardly ever see the headlining band.
Oh no, you never see them.
Well, they made it a point to like all come out and watch our entire sound check, and Chris and his wife gave us a beautiful handwritten note and a bottle of like a single barrel bourbon.
Wow.
Booker's, which was, I mean, that's like,
that's fucking classy, man.
It was incredible. So
you know, that shit goes a long way,
man,
too.
And it really,
you know,
does.
I mean?
It really does.
Because you know how many times I open for guys and they you know, when I played music, they were just bitter fucking.
Oh, yeah.
But there was dudes that were just out of the way cool. Joe Walsh.
Yeah.
George Thorogood.
Joe Walsh is a huge... He's up there for me.
He's a fucking god.
Yeah.
He's an absolute god. And I think between him and Keith Richards, they're going to live longer than both of us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
They'll be around for forever.
Who thought that he would live longer than Glenn Frey? That's fucking crazy.
Rest in power.
Yeah,
Glenn
man.
Glenn Frey.
God, what a bummer.
Yeah.
What a bummer. Well, fuck, man. I can't thank you enough for... doing the show,
and
I'm so fired up because, you know, I'm looking forward to see where this band goes because I really like it, and I think you got a great record here, and I was super burnt out. I just flew in from New York. I tell you the truth, I was going to shower and go to bed.
Yeah.
And then Sheepdogs hit me up, and then I saw the Twitter feed that you guys were opening. I go, oh, I got to get down there, and I'm so happy I did, you know?
Oh, man, we're glad you did, too. I'm missing Fort Worth, but I'm not missing Fort Worth weather right now. This has been like, LA has been incredible so far. So.
Well, you know, you got a lady?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow, man. That's got to be tough, right?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely presents challenges being super far away for long stretches of time. But
yeah, but with the internet, like smartphones and stuff, you could just Skype sex.
FaceTime all the time.
Sex time.
Get that FaceTime. Like, hopefully the NSA is not recording any of that stuff.
Oh, of course they are. They're laughing. They're going, look at this
guy.
Well,
you know what? Enjoy yourselves, NSA.
Yeah. That's
hope
awesome.
Hope you enjoyed it.
Well, I'm looking forward to, like I said, seeing where you watch you guys grow, and I know it's going to happen. Are you going to go do another record or just keep touring this one for a while?
We're going to be touring this one for a while, but we always write. Dave and I are constantly writing, so we'll be trying to book studio time just when we're back home and also while on the road recording with friends of ours at studios.
That's great.
All around. We're open to lots of stuff. So.
Now, where can everybody find you?
We're on all of the social media stuff is QCNH.
Yep.
It's sold at all record stores as far as their album goes. It's on iTunes,
Spotify.
You got it on
vinyl.
We got it on vinyl.
Yeah, I'm going to get a vinyl tonight.
Yeah. We've got a online store. And
online store.
All that stuff. So.
Killer t-shirts.
Thank you. Thank
and,
you.
And great fucking band. Thank you so much,
thanks,
man.
So much, Dean. Appreciate
and,
it.
And I can't wait to have people hear this and seek out your record. I keep shouting it out.
Yeah.
So there you go, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for doing the show. See you guys.